Let me first say just one thing. This is the result of a collective effort. We've been working together with my husband. We have two different perspectives. I am more of a public policy analyst and a specialist in social policy, whereas my husband is more of an international relations scholar. So actually,
no,
this doesn't work.
Yeah.
Okay, this was that one. Yes, now I'm here. We've been working on Africa for the past 10 years. I remember the first paper we presented on development, EU development cooperation, was in Montreal in 2009, and really nobody paid attention to what I was saying because nobody could care less about Africa. Now it's interesting to see that 10 years after, you know, Africa now is on the political agenda. This doesn't mean to say that things have improved, and what I'm trying to do here is to sort of go over sort of a different perspective on development cooperation, starting actually by explaining the title of the conference. Where does that, if you go back to the title of our conference, the title is, the subtitle is Closing the Gap Between Rhetoric and Reality. Where did I get that from? I got it from a speech by Prodi, and that was a speech 15 February 2000 in Strasbourg. The title of the speech was 2000-2005, Shaping the New Europe. You have here a few quotes from his speech, and actually when Prodi, and what I'll be doing is very quickly going over this long-term development to focus on more recent trends, but actually I think this is an important starting point, because when Prodi took over as president of the commission, he had a very difficult situation, because you all remember that we had the Santer resignation, and we had major problems of fraud and corruption in development cooperation. So it's interesting, because in the year 1999-2000, the idea was we need a new start, and this is what Manservisi was telling us now, that we're attempting a new reassessment of development, of not only of development, but of the entire relationship with Africa, between the EU and Africa. But in those years, the idea was exactly the same. I've only got three quotes here, as you see, only by in short, but it gives you a precise idea of where the Commission was heading at the time. Only by ensuring sustainable global development can Europe guarantee its own strategic security. This doesn't seem that outdated. We could have this kind of sentence even today. Second, we have to move from a procedure-oriented organization to a policy-oriented one. And I would sort of subscribe to this one too. The third one is we need to improve our aid strategies and budget allocations to ensure that they reflect the needs of the beneficiaries. But he's not just saying the needs of the beneficiaries, he's saying, and our own priorities. So the vision that Prodi was sort of putting forward was mutual interest. There has to be mutual interest. So it's not really true that development cooperation sort of was... There is a community, a development cooperation community that thinks that development is something that's just for the good of the people. But actually, in practice, and this is one of my points, being a political scientist and especially a public policy analyst, there is a gap between discourse and policy practice. And in fact, Prodi was pointing to that here, if anywhere, the gap between rhetoric and reality must disappear. If you read the documents, it looks as if the world is really wonderful, but then you go on the ground and you see what actually happens, and things are quite different. Now, very briefly, we've already mentioned, speakers before me have already mentioned the Paris Consensus. In my view, that was a high point of a fully-fledged strategy, development strategy, and it was tightly anchored to the Millennium Goals. What are these Millennium Goals? They're basically goals that have to do with people's well-being, with health, they have to do with education, and with health and the reduction of poverty. As you see here, the package consisted of considerable stepping up of UA budget, comprehensive strategy, so it's not new, the idea of policy coherence. It was fully sort of underlined in the Paris Consensus, which means having coherence between different strands of EU policies. This is not new. A focus on Africa in order to ensure that Africa is the number one beneficiary of the new approach. So if one reads the documents, one gets the impression, oh, wonderful, the EU is really engaged in trying to reach the targets of the Millennium Development Goals, which has to do, and they have to do with what? they have to do in particular to solving the problem of child and maternal mortality. They have to do with the problems of education in Africa. Now, look at what are the results. Actually, not the results, but if you look at the priorities, in the 48, what we did, we went through the 48 country strategy papers for the 10th EDF, which covered the period 2007-2013, and what do we see? Now, the fields which are more directly linked to the Millennium Development Goals are human development, education, and health. What you see from this table is that only in the case of four countries was health prioritized, only five countries education, nine countries human development. So at the other extreme, instead, you have 24 countries that prioritize budget support, 22 good governments. I would only like to say very quickly that I am not. I think that there are a lot of negative aspects in budget support and also in saying that you're in favor of good governments, because you're giving money to national governments. And throughout the day, we have had many times sort of people recalling the fact that unfortunately public administrations in African countries are not that reliable, a lot of corruption. So who are we giving the money to? If we use in budget support as a priority, we are actually pouring a lot of money, and this is the way I like to say it, into a bucket which is full of holes, and we really do not know where the money is going. Definitely in the hands of people, officials in the public administration, but does that money really get to the people, down on the ground?
Perhaps in Zurich.
This is interesting. We attended a conference last week, and Prodi was speaker of the conference in Bologna, and he said that at one point he thought maybe it's easier to give aid money directly to Zurich, rather than send it over to Africa and then it goes back to Zurich. This is not my words, it's Prodi's words. Yes. Prodi's words. There must have been a problem there if even the Commission started thinking that something was going wrong and decided to publish a document which is entitled Agenda for Change. Agenda for Change means there's something we want to change. It's not good what we're doing. And what are the main sort of the messages that come out of this document? EU aid is too sectorally dispersed. EU aid is too geographically dispersed. The Commission is generally considered as not having, and quote, it's quotations from the Agenda for Change, a staff document, working document for the Commission. The Commission is generally considered as not having the necessary capacity to act as a leader. The Commission suffers from administrative delays and burdensome hierarchy. But the interesting part is the next. The reason for a lack of prioritization are at least partly political. These are the only three lines where the document really goes to the heart of the problem. Given that many member states see the Commission as the donor of last resort, filling the gaps and ensuring the EU global presence. So, which means that who's in the driving seat? It's been basically the member states, which did not want to give up on development cooperation. But the point is, did something really change after the Agenda for Change? My problem is that dispersion of aid, and here I will just, I've already said it in class, my students know it, I had the chance, I've been many times to Tanzania, I had the chance to interview the Deputy Minister for Energy, and in a conversation I was asking, but what is the perception of the role of the EU in Tanzania? And he ended up by saying, insignificant. And here the Commission is saying, EU aid is too sectorally dispersed, EA is too geographically dispersed. So what happened? Let's look at, here you have, we analyzed even the country strategy papers, which are the agreement documents of between the EU and individual member states in the 48 sub-Saharan countries. Now finally, budget support goes down. It was 24 country strategy papers it was prioritized in the previous EDF, and it's only in four cases. But still, 29 for good governance. We see some actually improvement. You see 30 for improvement in sense a focus on agriculture, which definitely can improve the lives of people. But things such as human development, education, and health remain rather, there's an improvement, but they remain rather marginal. Only in 10 cases is there a prioritization for education and 10 for health. Energy gets 13, we find it as a focal issue in 13 country strategy papers. Now, what is my point? What is it that I want to stress? My point is this dispersion of what we've been doing in Africa. It's not that we haven't been spending, and I say we, I mean the Europeans and the European Union, but is this strategically, let's say, in the interest even of the European Union? If we look ahead, and I'm just going very quickly, we definitely need to consider that what our action is in the case of Africa, just because if we look at the demographic trends, we cannot ignore what is going on in Africa. A very young population, as Mansebizi was saying, which is good and bad, it gives us a lot of opportunities, but we really have to consider it. But we also have to consider the fact that even if we look at the distribution of wealth in Africa, here the data shows that the distance between average per capita income in sub-Saharan Africa is immense and European average income even over the next few years. So my point is, it is true that Africa is going through a major transformation, but a lot of people are still stranded, and we still have a very high death toll, especially when it comes to childbirth, to mothers and children. But not only that, we have major problems in the health sector. I'm talking about future challenges. So a lot of people now are worried about migration due to economic reasons, but there will also be migration which is linked to climate changes. Look at these are figures for 2012. More than 32 million people were had to leave their home because of desertification and bad situation, economic situation, due to climate change. Not only, and this morning we spoke about the political challenges. Look at this chart, and these charts are all taken from the ESPAS report, which is an interinstitutional think tank of the European institutions, which means the European institutions are looking ahead and thinking, what is ahead of us? What are the problems? We have Africa. Yes, there are changes, but in a way, are we sure that everything is going well? This is a map on fragile and failed states. And the next one is the diffusion of terrorism across the Sahel region from west to east. So what I'm saying is that there are major challenges, major problems. A lot of things are happening. Africa is changing very rapidly. But my point is, what do we need to do if we want to sort of have a better situation for the African people, but also for Europe? How do the EU citizen view development cooperation? Because I think it was Niels that said that actually only very few people were consulted on this new move of development cooperation. But if we ask Europeans, it is interesting to note that, in fact, the majority of Europeans think that development cooperation is important. Look at these figures. 80% think that development is in the EU's own interest. Okay. And next, what are the challenges for developing countries? I would like to draw your attention on this. 41%, this was 2000, it's a Eurobarometer survey of 2016. 41% of respondents said it's peace and security, but as many as 34% are saying health and education. But have we heard the word health here today? I think not once. And I think that health is one of the major problems. Why should we be dealing with that? But before I get into that, let's look at some more data. Actually, there's still support across all European countries for development cooperation, for money spent for development. Yes, there's a difference between Sweden, where 98% of the people think it is important to spend money on development cooperation, and the last one is Latvia and Bulgaria, where it is about 70%. But still, a large majority of citizens think that it is important. Now, look at the more recent, 2018. You see 80% of Europeans think that it is important to, but they're saying help people in developing countries. Help people. Actually, if you look at this next chart, you see that as many as 30% of Europeans responding to the survey think that we should be even spending more money. You see, it's gone up. It's the first bar. And around 50% think that we should continue with this kind of financial commitments. But again, what are the areas, according to European citizens, we should be concentrating? Peace and security, education and health. But education and health are not in the current perspective. Now, some good reasons for prioritizing the support of national health systems in Africa. from an African perspective. So what I'm trying to say is that it is strategically important for Europe to focus on a narrower set of targets. I will try to give some arguments why we should be. I've been saying it for the past 10 years, and I will continue over the next 5 or 6 or 7 or until I get tired of it. Why it's actually there's no. Everyone knows that the health situation in Africa is very dramatic. But let's just recall a couple of figures. The birth continent of the Homo sapiens bears 1/4 of the global disease burden. Do we remember about Ebola? Yet, and it's not just about Ebola, there's malaria, there's HIV. It spends only 1% of the worldwide health expenditure, 1%. And it only has 3% of the world health workers. According to the World Health Organization, the regions where there's more than one physician for less than 1,000 patients are in. Look at this picture. Look at this map. As you see, the numbers that you see on Africa, this means 50,000 people for one doctor, 33,000 people for one doctor, 25,000 people in the best situation for one doctor. Think of the situation in our own countries and compare it with Africa. But is it about charity that I'm talking? Not really. If we look at child mortality, the situation again, where you have the countries in red, these are the countries, the bottom 10 in the world in terms of child mortality. But why should we care about this? Is it that I'm a philanthropist and I'm thinking, you know, I want to help people, I don't want to see sufferance, and I don't want to see, I've got 4 grandchildren, so I wouldn't like them to be in those countries and be sort of at risk of not even having enough food. But that is not the point. My point is that it is mutually in the interest of both Europe and Africa to focus on this particular sector. It is true that finally it looks as if a political interest, even by African leaders, is emerging. I won't go through those quotes. There are various important documents where African leaders have endorsed this. But let's just read the last one. Health is at the heart. It's the African Union website that says health is at the heart of Africa's developmental agenda. Okay, so there is apparently a political will, but in fact the results are still extremely poor. Only 2 of the 55 African Union member states meet Africa's target of dedicating at least 15% of the government budget to health. So we're not on track. And also, in no case this investment reaches the target. Can you imagine the target is $86 per capita? We are spending something like $1,300 per capita. So this is the distance between us and Africa. Against this backdrop, e-health can be a game changer. Why am I putting e-health into the picture? Because obviously we all know that Africa does not have infrastructure. Roads, connections are very poor, very bad. Now, digital technologies can really make a difference. Digital technologies are spreading, as you see here, like wildfire, especially because they allow to jump from no infrastructure to the 4th industrial revolution. The positive impact of e-health is fully endorsed by the World Health Organization. I won't read the quote. The point is, if you're in a remote area, if you can use a mobile phone, that can be extremely useful, both from the point of view of the patient, the person that is sick, but also from the point of view of the health workers that can ask for help. I've seen it myself in hospitals in the middle of Tanzania, where doctors could be communicating via internet and trying to solve the case of a child that they were unable to solve, and they could ask help from a hospital in Rome. But it's not just about the fact that you have the worst records in terms of child and maternal mortality. What are some good reasons for prioritizing the support of national healthcare systems in Africa from a European perspective? You see, it's not about charity, it's not about giving, it's in the interest of both sides. So let's look at it from a European perspective. And the first thing I want to say is that As a political science, I know political scientist, I know very well that the welfare state was extremely important for consolidating our democracies. So my point is that in Africa, if we just think about that economic development will go everywhere and will improve the conditions of generally of people, that's the idea of the trickle down, which I consider as not very successful. At least the historical data do not prove that that has been successful. But if people are in terrible conditions, what will they do? It will be easier even for terrorist movements to catch over on them and to get a hold on them because their conditions are so bad. What do they care about democracy? What do they know about democracy? What is the government doing for them? So my point is that given and sort of not giving the money to national governments, but actually supporting something where you can have a European banner, this is what we're doing. We're not doing much, but we're doing something which goes directly to the people. This could be an extremely important thing for consolidating political systems in Africa and stopping the increasing sort of spread even of terrorist movements. But let's go on other arguments. The new emphasis on strengthening national healthcare systems gives European countries, and this is a word that I want to use, competitive advantage. Is it in our interest to sort of focus on infrastructure? You saw that during the EDF, competitive advantage. This is an important word, I think. Can we compete with China in building railways, in building highways? I've seen the highways that China's built in Ethiopia. I mean, they can do that. Can we do it? I don't think so. That's not where we can be competitive. Would it be education? Not even, because Africa is split among Anglophone Africa and Francophone Africa. Our education systems in Europe actually are very different. So would that be the banner? Would that be the flag for a Europe, something that can be really identified as the European added value? I'm not really convinced. Whereas I think that we do have a competitive advantage when it comes to healthcare. Why? Because we provide universal healthcare. We've been providing it across Europe. It is a history of 100 years of development in health policies, and it doesn't matter whether it's a Bismarckian system or whether it's a Beveridgean system, because still we're providing universal, very high-quality healthcare. So we do have the expertise, we have the knowledge, we have the managing capacity to handle this. And this is where we can give an added value. But as I said, it's not just about managing capacity. The trends and outlook of medical scientific development offer an unprecedented opportunity for linking EU internal policies on public health and research and innovation with development cooperation policy. I'm talking about e-health, okay? And when I'm talking about e-health, I'm saying that there is an advocacy coalition that could be built in Europe. European medtech industry, which already enjoys a leading position in the world, could play a crucial role in supporting the refocusing of development cooperation with both internal and external beneficial effect. By concretely, and then I come to the last point, as I said, when I had this reaction by this deputy minister, insignificant, I really felt very bad. I think the EU could achieve the visibility it largely lacks at present among the African, I'm talking about the African citizenry at large, and perhaps gradually help cancelling the bad memories that are connected to European colonial domination. And it's not just a historical thing that people have forgotten. Because if you look at the kind of discourse that China is putting forward, China is always saying to the African leaders, we're on your side. We know because we were also exploited by the Europeans. So we won't do what they've been doing. So what I'm saying is there are various elements that could promote a sort of focusing of our intervention. We can't cover everything. There's the little that we can do maybe should sort of be clearly visible. Now here I'm mentioning Africa, I'm mentioning a high-level Africa-Europe forum exactly on high-tech and the use of e-health. This is, but obviously this is still sort of minimal compared. But look at this picture. According to current forecasts, by 2020 there will be 700 million smartphones in Africa. So there's the possibility to link even innovation, technology, and in Europe, it's especially small and medium-sized enterprises that are in the field of innovation, smartphones, digital. It's not the big companies. It's not Microsoft. It's not Google. It's not Amazon. It's largely small and medium-sized enterprises. But it would be possible. There are possibilities to develop this kind of link. And if we look at a market study on mHealth, it is growing year after year. It is growing enormously. So there's an economic side also to this. Are we still in time? The next picture you see, China. And this comes from the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation, which took place in September 2018. Then President is now no longer him, but then President Paul Kagame, who was at the time the rotating chair of the African Union, said China understood Africa's global position and engaged as an equal partner. Kagame, who is a critic of foreign aid, praised Beijing's win-win partnership. I have my doubts about, the engaging on as an equal partner. Praised Beijing's win-win partnership with Africa and commended the two sides' growing economic and political partnership in an increasingly changing and multipolar world. I think we need to fully take into account what is China doing in Africa right now. It's a competitor. Africa is not a zero-sum game. We know very well it's an issue about land grabbing. There's an issue about expanding markets for the growing middle class of African countries. There's an issue about oil. So China has very clear interests. And I have seen myself in the Dome, a huge university built by China, in just 2 years. So how can we compete with that? Our growing ties with China do not come at anyone's expense. Indeed, the gains are enjoyed by everyone who does business on our continent. So, and the new move is that China is also thinking to becoming a global health leader. Think the fact that Margaret Chan, who's the Director General of the World Health Organization, is now working directly for China for a Chinese committee of the Politburo. China has an immense capacity to develop essential medicines, and previously key examples are artemisinin, which is a life-saving anti-malarial drug discovered. And what about the US? As you can see here, US global funding is going down. So there is still room for doing something which is beneficial for the people, and this is the history of Europe. The welfare state was a very important element underpinning our democratic development. But my conclusion is that unfortunately supporting health system in Africa is not on the EU's radar. Thank you for your attention.